Welcome to Faith Uncut, a podcast where we explore faith in ways that might get you kicked out of most churches. I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira. And this week, we will be jumping all into, how do we know God?
Yeah, like, how?
That's such a loaded question.
Well, yeah, so I guess this question arises out of tradition where we're told that we know God from the scriptures. The scriptures are the word of God. And the word of God is Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ is the Bible. And let's worship the Bible. And we get into this idolatry about the King James Version and all this. So, you know, understanding, is this the, exactly, is that the best way to do it? Is that the right way to do it? Is there a right way?
Is that the only way to do it? Right. The short answer is no, it is not the only way. So yeah, this is a pretty loaded question. And at going with the theme of this season in rebuilding, you know, our faith, you know, and reestablishing and reconstructing what we're thinking about. This is a critical question because it is not all of those otherwise esoteric things that we just named. You know him by this third party validation. No, I think that as we open ourselves up, not only to critique, but also honor ourselves with no longer carrying forth things that have been proven to not just not be true per se, but they are harmful to the ultimate relationship that we want to have with God and, you know, in essentially one another, you find, at least I have found, that it is way more complex than anything that has been presented to me in any sort of structure. The building blocks of the relationship that I know that I've established with this entity, this understanding that I have of this entity, have to do with moments and situations and circumstances that are not outwardly defined. They're not easily found. The nuances is where I have found, you know, if we say the devil's in the details, so is God. You know, he is in these, in the minutia of how we do what we do and how we speak and how we act and how we treat and how we expect and ultimately how we love. Love is such a huge critical life force, much like water, much like the sun. Love is important. And if we attribute the characteristics of love to this entity, especially by this stage in your life, you realize that love is messy. Love has very, very high highs and can have very low lows for a myriad of reasons. So when we say, how do we know God? It's almost like checking in with yourself, you know, checking in with, why would you have a relationship if you don't understand how that person entity is in relationship with you?
Mm-hmm. And we've asked that relationship question in last season.
5011 ways.
Right. The episode that I'm thinking of is, I don't know the name of the episode.
Oh.
We asked the question.
Library deep.
We asked the question about, why is God so bad at relationships with black people?
Yes. Yes.
So then the question becomes, do you want to be in a relationship with the God? Or do you need God to do other things? So I start with the question, what is God? What is God to you? Which is not, I guess, a traditional way of thinking about it.
Like, but we've talked about that. We've talked about understanding him through the experience by which you feel bonded. So some of us, when you say, what is God to you? And in some people's first thought is, or, you know, some of the sayings that you get from church, you know, he's a mother to the mothers, he's a father to the fathers, he's a lawyer in the courtroom, he's a doctor. Okay, somebody has experienced their relationship with God through that lens. You know, somebody has needed him to be a comforter, so he's a comforter first. Somebody has needed the entity to teach them, so he's a teacher first. He is a, you know, he might be a parental figure, he might be more like a friend, he might be, you know, just thinking about how we experience it, that will be your first identifier.
Yeah, God, they may need God to be a clean drug test. They don't know. I mean, listen, people need God to be,
I always say he's a gangster and a gentleman.
Exactly. So, I mean, in the Hebrew Bible, they do a lot of praising of the underdog. The underdog is the main protagonist in many stories. And so you get things like the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But Isaac and Jacob were the underdogs. Like, they weren't supposed to be. They weren't the firstborn. So
right.
technically, it could have been God is the God of Abraham, Ishmael, and Esau, which sounds so weird. But you had these underdog brothers. God is the God of so many things to so many people. Yeah. Who is God, or what is God to you? How do we define this?
Right.
And I think there is an element that we need to acknowledge that God is personal to me.
Yes.
And in these ways.
Yep.
That's important. I mean,
hugely.
Yeah, because I mean, it's not sufficient for me mm-hmm. to say God is the God of the Hebrew Bible, or God is the God Mm-mm. of the Bible, or God is nope. the God of the, you know, the nope. New Testament, whatever. Like that.
That's his day job.
Or maybe God is she, and God is mm-hmm. you know, God is the creator. God is Mother Nature, some people mm-hmm. would say. And so it's so many ways to look at this, but we define what we believe about God. Now, we can adopt cultural beliefs and common beliefs. We can share those, and those are important also, but there will always be an element where God is your God of this thing mm-hmm. that is really important to you.
Yeah, even, and that can exist and still have you in agreement and fellowship with others. He can be the healer for you while you stand in agreement for others that he is the provider mm-hmm. or that he is the, you know, the, he can be parental. And that is full and fine and okay, even if he acts more as an understanding friend or is experienced as a companion by somebody else. Not a intimate companion, but like a companion, the intimacy being that I've invited you in to know me, mm-hmm. you know, and I am allowing myself to be pulled into you to know you better.
And so that's an important point, that this God relates to us differently
mm-hmm.
because it begs the question for me, you know, is God knowable?
Mm.
God, for me, would be knowable in part.
Yeah.
And then any God worth worshiping would have to have a part that is unknown for me. Like mm-hmm. that God shouldn't be able to be figured out.
Completely.
In the time that I have, from the vantage point that I have, little me on this little planet in this tiny solar system in this vast galaxy,
mm-hmm.
there should be elements of that God that I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So God is knowable and also unknowable. And that unknowable, in that unknowable space is where we can allow for other expressions of God. Maybe you know or experience God differently than me. I don't know that part. That hasn't been my experience.
Right.
But I do acknowledge that in this vastness of unknowableness, perhaps,
mm-hmm.
that's where you experience God.
Yes.
And so that's why it's important to know this personal expression of who is God to you, because it allows for God to be God to other people.
Yeah.
So the last point on that is this unknowable God allows us to acknowledge our limitations. It allows us to position ourselves correctly. Mm-hmm. Like, we are not God,
mm-hmm.
depending on how you see it. But we understand that there are certain things that we can't do. And so that's where we allow for other God knowledge from other people, other cultures, other faith traditions and things like that. All right. So how do we then come to know God?
Uh-huh.
So if God is, you know, as we understand, and God is knowable and unknowable, how do we come to know this God?
Okay. We feel inspired by his presence. There is definitely an emotional intelligence to experiencing God, or an emotional facet. And I think that people attribute their emotional understanding of who and what God is to the overall quality of the relationship. Because if you can't feel it, it sometimes makes you question how real
mm-hmm.
the bond, the connection, the relationship actually is. So across time, we have decided that collectively, we've decided that God is an entity to be experienced, not just to know, walk up and shake their hand and go on, but to be experienced, which calls for our senses to be engaged, which causes for the continuum of our experiences to be engaged. So we look back, when I look back over my life, mm-hmm. right? Hindsight being 2020, you begin to place God in certain situations where maybe at the time you did not see him or understand the essence of his presence in that situation. But time has gone on and you look back and you say, oh my goodness, you mm-hmm. know, you were there all the time.
So God is at work. I see God at work as the language I use is spirit. There's a spirit or something intangible about God that is constantly working. It's working in everyone that I meet. Mm. It's working in.
We talked about that.
Yes.
Spirit always wants to reconcile itself.
Right. So mm-hmm. the same spirit or inspiration that inspires people to write beautiful poetry mm-hmm. and stories about God, that same thing works in me, and I believe that it works in you and everyone else. And so that, I'll call inspiration, is one way that I've come to know God. There are things that just my attention is drawn to that mm-hmm. I wouldn't naturally do, or things that I don't want to sound like weird about it, but there are things that I consider that I know that's not, I don't really care about that thing. So like that thing is always calling attention to God in other people.
But I feel like that's that facet, that's that lens by which you can see that mm-hmm. at work. That is that emotional value to the connection to the entity.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that, the more you practice or exercise that muscle,
the more you see.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so that's, I mean, you have people that see different things, and it may be weird to you that they, or foreign to you that they see it that way. But they may be attuned differently than you are. Maybe they more practice, or maybe that muscle is just stronger in them than it is in you. And you may have a different muscle that's stronger, mm-hmm. but that's one way that we have come to know God. That's one way in the Christian tradition, the Bible, inspiration is throughout. And so that's one way.
Okay.
Number two.
Yeah.
Prayer and meditation.
Mm-hmm.
This is so important for me. Like I mentioned in episode one, I've taken a break from social media, and that silence matters so much. And I found God in that silence. Mm-hmm. I found peace in the silence that is not the barrage of timeline information.
Yeah,
it's not always bad information, but it is it's a almost like a high pressure water hose of information that you can't seem to turn off. When I'm able to quiet all of that and just be silent, mm-hmm. then I can hear. I'll take my kids sometimes out to walk, and they like to talk because they're children. But I'll have them listen and say, "What do you hear?"
Mm-hmm.
If we walk past a lake, what does that smell like? I want them to start experiencing God through their senses,
mm-hmm.
and this type of prayer and meditation and being conscious of what's around you, what those senses are telling you, is a way to experience God. It's mm-hmm. important, you know, whether you're praying and you're talking and you're asking things, or whether you're just being silent. God is in that silence,
mm-hmm.
and that's important for us in terms of experiencing God.
So we've talked about how important it is to be able to sit with someone in silence and just be a companion.
Mm-hmm.
And that experience of not only support, but the word that comes to my mind is the vulnerability, right? So in your prayers and in your thoughts, you should be able to strip away all of those barriers and walls and masks and finally be vulnerable. It has to be some space in your life to be honest with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So some of us, you know, put on a mask to go to work every day. We work in environments that we wouldn't necessarily choose. You know, if we had our choice, maybe we wouldn't choose the coworkers that we have.
Mm-hmm.
We would do something different if we could. But when you, like you said, when you quiet down and you are present, I find that there's so much strength in the quiet and in the silence, because I am allowed to shed all that armor and just be vulnerable with, one, myself, allowing myself to think certain things and move through my feelings about certain things. But then it's like, if I am actively inviting God into the meditation of the prayer, I'm going over what is on my heart, and I can be honest, and it sounds nothing like mm-hmm. altar call. You know what I mean? I can be frank. I can experience my emotions because I experience him as a person, as an entity that can withstand all of those emotions. We had a conversation previously, you know, what do you do when you're mad at God? And I'm like, I believe in a God that's big enough to understand that I'm mad. Mm-hmm. I'm a human. You know what I mean? Right. But there is so much honesty there where you don't have to act like something you're not. You don't have to act like you're more put together than you really are.
Number three.
Okay, God makes sense and God does not. Reason allows us to see the part of God which is knowable.
God is in the reason. God is in the logic.
Really?
Yeah, God is there. Like, things have to make sense. So, for instance, when I would hear people, particularly evangelicals, tell me that the Bible is literal and I would, like, things wouldn't make sense. So I would be like, well, God made the light on day one, and then you had three more days. So on the fourth day, God makes the stars. And I know, if God didn't make the sun until day four, how'd you have all these days before four? Like, God is in those details. God is in those things that make sense and don't. And it's important for us to actually exercise that muscle, because it'll tell us things. It'll tell us when, oh, wait, that doesn't really work out mm-hmm. that well. I don't think that that's going to be the right path for you. And in the absence of God texting you exactly what you should be doing, your reason.
The text I'm waiting for.
But right. Your reason serves as a guide for, you know, how to live, how to maneuver yeah. in the world where God is in all of this. Mm-hmm. All right, that leads to number four. God is in the theology. Now, this one sounds like more than it is. All I mean by this is,
keep it simple.
Everyone is located in a different place with respect to how they view God. So, for instance, you, Amira, are a woman. Mm-hmm. That puts you in a different position than me. You were born in New York. You maybe have had a different family structure. You have had a different set of life experiences, and all of those contribute to how you understand God.
Yep.
Now, me, based on what we said already, me giving space for that expression allows me to understand I have a way of seeing it, and mm-hmm. you have a way of seeing it. And I want to hear your way of seeing it, because I have no way to be in your position. Yeah. I have no way to occupy your space.
And when we share those experiences, it's almost like being like, let me tell you what else your God can do.
Because God grows yes. in the sharing of how you view God yep. through your life experience. So your theology is shaped by your experience, and that experience is uniquely yours. It is the sharing of that experience that allows us to contribute to who God is mm-hmm. for all of us.
Ooh, that was good.
Okay. Number five. Yeah, I was hoping. I was like, theology, I'm going to lose them on that. But now it's...
No, that was good. So we also have sacred text. No text is pure in motive or composition. And this has been proven to be especially true in what we regard as the Bible. They came together in a messy fashion, the sacred text. And if we knew all that went into the composition of it, we could lose trust.
Let me give you an example of that. If you think about the way the New Testament was compiled.
Yes.
First, you don't get the Gospels. The Gospels don't exist yet. Paul is starting to write letters to regions, and he's telling them about what he believes about God and Jesus and all these things. And so he sends a letter to Ephesus, and they share it with all the churches in Ephesus. And so that's how things spread. Now, everyone didn't have all of the letters. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't even know how many letters existed. Did Paul write 8 or 18? Right. You don't know. All you know is I have these four. Then, you know, there's other writings and other things that are going on. They're doing this in Rome. Eventually, the Romans are like, no, y'all are doing too much. We coming through.
Y'all wilding.
We burning all that shit. So we need you to give us the documents. They didn't give them all the documents. They had to make decisions mm-hmm. based on what they knew, which is partial versions of the story. about what to give the Romans to burn the gospel. So not everything existed to get to the point where they were compiled into what we know today as the New Testament. Mm-hmm. So along the way, there were so many ways for this to go wrong. People may not have had all the information. How do you make a decision? You got four books. Let's say you got Acts, Ephesians, Galatians, and the Gospel of Enoch. You don't know which one to use because you don't know who wrote what. You're not in the 21st century. You're in second century, the first century. You're making decisions that will forever impact the existence of these letters. Who's to say you made all the right decisions or everyone made all the right decisions? There's a lot of places for that to go. Then when people start to sit down and say, well, I like this one doesn't really match here. Mm-hmm. Let's try to get some diversity in terms of what we're presenting. Like, there's so many ways where this could have gone left or could have not been quite right. Mm-hmm. But it is in the sacred text that we understand that this is the way some people saw God. Again, that's why we started the way we started, because it is different for each person. This is the way Paul saw it. This is the way Paul saw it with respect to the Romans. This is the way Paul saw it with respect to his Jewish heritage. This is the way, you know, all these other writers saw it, the writers of the Gospels. It's like, okay, they don't agree because they all have these differing views about things. Mm-hmm. And so it is in that diversity where we can see God, where we are affirmed that it may not be quite what you're seeing, but it works.
Yeah.
And so in these texts, whether it's the Quran, whether it's the Bible, whether it's people have taken time to consider God, and we should consider the God that they see from their theology, their location, because the unknowable part may be there. Number six.
Tradition. Ritual has always been a powerful connector. The connection is to God through each other. Tradition allows you to connect to the God in others as you focus on God.
Yeah, tradition or ritual matter to us as human beings. Like if you got up and every day was completely different, like a radically different day. Today, you brush your teeth in the morning, you take a shower, you get your clothes on, you go to work.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, somebody crashes into your house, you know, you don't get a chance to brush your teeth.
Mm-hmm. You something radically different.
If every day was like that, like we wouldn't be able to function. We all need it would be ritual traumatic. At some point.
People experience that and it's traumatic.
Yeah, ritual is vital to us in the way we do it.
Mm-hmm.
Community ritual allows us to build relationships with each other as we experience God. Now, we're working, I don't know if you can tell, we're working towards this idea that God is in all of it. And so the ritual or the tradition that I exercise with you binds us together. And and now what we're saying is where I experience God through the way you see God, now we're drawing God together through our relationship of ritual and tradition. And that tradition could be, let's say, prayer. It could be attending a service at a specific time. It could be a liturgy. It could be anything. It doesn't have to even be religious. It could be us, you know, watching an event together.
Right.
It could be us. We know every time at the Grammys, we're going to be watching and tweeting. We're going to be like that.
Trying to see who won album of the year.
Yeah. So so ritual gives us normalcy. And in that normalcy, we kind of knit these disparate pieces of God together.
It kind of works like myth too, where it gives you the common narrative. If you know what to expect, you can repeat it. You can make it more normalized.
Mm-hmm.
So we said we don't get to a point of worship without there being an agreement on not only who is being worshiped, but how we're going to do that. How are we going to acknowledge how we see our connection ultimately to the entity.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a way, because, like, you know, I love choir, but it's like even in choir rehearsal, as you're learning all the different parts, sometimes something so very special happens when the sopranos, the altos, the tenors all get together and they make this joyful noise because everybody's contributing their part. Mm-hmm. And as a lifelong alto, this emotional facet, this idea of feeling a bond and feeling, I don't know, like an overall positive feeling with one another, like we're together and we're going to sing this song. And when I sing it by myself, I'm just one voice. But when we all come together as 100 voices, mm-hmm. something very special, very unique, and on the level of worship begins to happen because I'm bringing, you know, my art to this. Mm-hmm. I'm bringing my heart to this. You are bringing your art, your heart, your skill to this, and we're making something better together mm-hmm. than maybe what existed, you know, myself by myself, you by yourself.
So that tradition, that ritual of doing things leads to number 7 on the list, which is testimony and experience. Mm-hmm. It's kind of along the lines of what you're thinking of. And now think about this in terms of the X-Men. All right. So I would love to have a mutant ability. Like I would love to choose one. And the thing is, I'm always aware of no matter which one I choose, because I imagine this a lot because I'm a blurred and yes. sometimes I need to have more control in my mind over my environment. So no matter which power I get, it's just that one. Mm. The X-Men is such a great collection to me because, so for instance, you got Cyclops, who is the leader of the X-Men, depending on when you read it. He has these optic blast, so he draws this cosmic energy into his body. He's always absorbing it, and it comes out in this concussive optic blast, this mm-hmm. red thing. Mm-hmm. Super powerful. You can do so many things with this. But if he needed to get somewhere in a hurry, he needs someone else. If he needed to fly, he needs something else. He's very limited in what he can do, and that's how all of the X-Men are. Wolverine, everybody loves Wolverine because he has this healing factor. Yeah. He has these claws, all this rage and all of this stuff. But
all this anger fuel.
Right. Wolverine is constantly, when the first run of the X-Men with this group, he was constantly being thrown by Colossus because it was called a cannonball. And that was the only way he could get to a velocity to actually impact things. Wolverine can't understand or read people's minds. He doesn't have telekinesis. He doesn't have the powers of Iceman or anything. And all of them have one thing that they do really well. So testimony and experience is kind of like that for me, where God is to be lived. Mm-hmm. And so our experiences with others are our experiences with God. And it's through those experiences that we encounter God.
Yep.
When I see what you are, who you are, what you can do, how you see things, I'm experiencing God through you. Yep. And then the stories that I tell about that, or stories that you tell about how you experience God, those are the things that help us come to know who God is. Yep. Because I'm no longer Cyclops with this one ability. Now I'm joining with you, who is a genius and can figure out anything. And now there's more God there. There's more. I understand God better mm-hmm. because I can see how the God works in you.
I see it kind of cycling through some of these other areas. You share that testimony and experience. And then I just want people to think about the things we've been saying. Sometimes, you know, whether you've been actively thinking about it or mindlessly, or you didn't really quite understand the concept. But like when somebody prays and they say, I saw what you did for. Fill in the blank. Or I'm meditating over your works when you did XYZ. This is you calling into recollection. You're bringing it forth. You are responsible for these things. Mm-hmm. Because you have done these things, I know that I can trust you for these other things. Or I know that I can lean on you to do that. So again, we said at the top of the show, how we describe what God is has a lot to do with how we either first ever or most reliably experience him. So for the person who has never quite had that testimony of a way being made out of no way, mm-hmm. right? This is some old time church yeah. stuff. You make a way out of no way. Right, okay. Right. So what exactly does that look like? Mm-hmm. Now, when you hear somebody say, I did not have the rent, mm-hmm. right? And this is not magic. I did not have my basic needs covered. And I leaned on my faith and connected to other faithful people who understood that need. That is God manifest, because when you don't have that rent, that is no way. The way being made out as you share your testimony and experience. Lord, I know that you have done this for others. Mm-hmm. I can trust you for this. You didn't know how, but then when you went to entities that you did not realize, people that you did not realize considered you that way or had resource, somebody had an extra $100. What is an extra $100? Mm-hmm. Right? But that's a miracle when you need it.
That is so important to be able to do that. I know the people who listen to us may have a couple things in common with us in terms of how they see things and how they've seen things. Mm-hmm. And for me, at one point, there was a temptation to look at the way that other people experience God. So, for instance, in that testimony that you just described, maybe I'll be like, I don't see God that way. And so I invalidate internally. I wouldn't say anything out loud, but I would invalidate that particular experience or expression. But what we're saying today, because we're growing, is that experience or expression is still valid, even if that's not the way you experience God. It's important to be able to give space for the way other people do it, because it'll to not do that means you're disrupting all of the things that come before, all of the binding together, the knitting together of God in terms of how we encounter God. You're going to disrupt that, because now I've created a wedge between you and I. And I say the way that you experience God is not the way. I don't even have the authority to say that.
Right.
But I'm saying I'm cutting off that expression of God from my space, and I'm only doing my thing.
And we talked about how when we bring our overly human lens to what other people's experiences could be, we do that. We cause harm because everybody's not living the same. So the presence of God is relative to where the person is feeling like they're experiencing their life. You understand? So there are things that are actually strong testimonies, but because it sounds like, or it might not look as perfect or as clean as maybe some, I don't even want to attribute that to conservatism, but you know, a lack of understanding that everybody's path is different could cause you to, like you said, invalidate and devalue how someone who might be economically poorer than you experiences the presence of God, or someone who is, we call it the fringes, the marginalized. How does somebody see God? Somebody is experiencing God in a way like, let's make this thing real. Unaccompanied minors. This is the first thing that came to my mind.
Okay.
Unaccompanied minors, which are migrant children that arrive at a border without a parent seeking entry, possibly asylum in a country. This is not germane to the United States, but even when we talk about the United States, with all the dangers of that journey, somebody experiences the faithfulness of God that their child made it. And it is worth it. It is, because it has not stopped. So it's like, regardless of the challenges and the deterrence, the fact that my child made it only with what I think is the covering of God, my prayers. Wow. That's huge. That is the experience. That is the testimony. That is what your God can do. You just don't happen to be a migrant.
Right.
But that's where their faith is. Coming from environments where there's not a lot of economic security, when needs are met, you hear the testimony. You put food on my table. Okay. What does that mean? Some people can't conceptualize that because they did not come of age, or they do not live with that type of insecurity, food insecurity. But imagine being on stamps and it's the 24th and you don't have money to go to the supermarket. And this is something that I understand. When meals materialize, and we look at it, I think it's, you know, it's magic. I think it's magic that comes from people who have always had to make a little bit more out of a little bit less, right? But where do they attribute that it comes from? They say, God did this. God gave me the skill set to make the big pot meal that fed everybody in this house. And we have some left over. If that is not a reinterpretation of the loaves and the fishes, and it carries your faith forward.
Right. And so we have to be open to that.
You have to be.
Last one before we get out of here. Number 8 is nature. this is like one of my favorites.
Yeah.
God is constantly growing and changing.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly. All around us through nature. God is in all of it. And we can appreciate, respect, and know God through our interactions with nature or mm-hmm. the creation, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
God exists in a way that that relationship is still alive. So just like I can harm you, I can also harm nature. I can see the impact of my actions on mm-hmm. nature. I can see, even if there's no harm there, if I'm just in the silence and I'm out looking at, say, my animals behave, my pets behave, or just insects behave, or things like that. Like, I can see it in that. I can see it in the cycles of the seasons. I can see it in the way that life comes from death. And there's so many examples there that mm-hmm. that I believe are part of the code, part of the design
mm-hmm.
that serves as an indicator for, hey, you can see what I'm doing through that. Like, mm-hmm. you don't have to go to seminary. You don't have to know all of these things and read right. all these books. You can go outside and watch how that bee pollinates that plant
yeah.
or how stalk of corn needs that second stalk beside it to germinate and actually grow. If you only have one, you're not going to have any corn. You can see how I've worked all of this together as an example for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I want you to help me care for it.
Yeah.
So these are eight of many others. This was not an exhaustive list.
Not in the least.
So I guess kind of what we want you to do for this week while you're waiting on the next episode, just be conscious of these God encounters,
right.
like how you encounter God with other people and with yourself, how you share your stories or your testimonies about what God has done for you. And I'm not saying you got to get up there and first give an honor to God.
No,
you know, you don't have to do all that, but you know, just
all that pomp and
expression, your expression of the life that you're living
mm-hmm.
is a communication about the God that you carry. And mm. so you should
Amen.
Be aware of this. Just take a week and encounter God and notice where you see that. And then be intentional about interacting with God in healthy ways.
Mm-hmm.
Because we said before, we don't want the God in you doesn't want to harm the God in me. So how does that play out in my relationships with other people, with yeah. nature, with other things? Like, be intentional about those interactions to make sure that not only am I not harming God, but I'm adding to God. I'm adding to the experience of God. And just see how your week goes. You know, if you notice anything,
tell us about it on Twitter.
Like, yo, this was bullshit. I didn't get anything out of this. Just let us know. All right, we make an adjustment. So, for Faith Uncut, I'm your host, Mike.
And I'm Amira.
For more on Faith Uncut, check us out at faithuncut.com.